Hey there, my name is Ricky Smith, and I'm the founder of Random Acts of Kindness Everywhere, a nonprofit that simply does exactly what it says, promote kindness everywhere. We know the world is crazy right now. If you are searching for a podcast that has a deeper conversation about race, my co-host Angel Gray and I will be discussing everything going on right now on our podcast, Random Acts of Podcast, on Blue Wire Podcast Network. To find out more, go to rakenow.org. Enjoy the show.
We are excited to know where we're going to be playing and excited to have a city that is excited about having us.
Once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider, no matter what city.
We are now the Las Vegas Raiders.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Vegas Nation Podcast. It's time to break down all things happening with the Raiders and around the world right now because everything's just been crazy in the past few weeks, and we're going to get into some of what's happening here on the show. This is your home for Raiders fast takes and smart coverage. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. Follow along on social media. Download the Vegas Nation app and check out VegasNation.com. And we are brought to you by Favor Drink, a favor.com. It's Heidi Fang here with Vinny Bonsignor, Ed Graney, and Adam Hill. And let's get into it, guys. We have to start with some of the top news here happening with the Raiders, and that would be Lynn Bowden Jr.'s home getting searched by the DEA. Now, there was not an arrest made, as far as I understand, but he was handcuffed outside the house while the home was searched, and they did find some guns. So, Vinny, what do you know about this situation?
Well, it sure sounds like, at least on the surface, and you know, more information will come out. The DEA sent a release out or a statement out yesterday saying it's an ongoing investigation. But from the looks of it, wrong place at the wrong time for Lynn Bowden Jr. and his son, Lynn Bowden III. They were staying at his grandmother's house. He told me when I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. You know, he's in the process, obviously, of securing, you know, a new place here in Las Vegas. So he's not at Kentucky anymore. You know, so he needed a place to stay. It looks like he was at his grandmother's house. It looks like he got awoken early morning on Wednesday for a DEA search. He was handcuffed. He fully cooperated. I talked to his representatives yesterday, you know, did what he was supposed to do. He was ultimately uncuffed and released. And as of right now, no charges, no arrests, no nothing for anybody, you know, and specifically Lynn Bowden Jr.
Ed, you had said it's time that the Raiders just get Bowden Jr. on a plane, get him over here, get him to Vegas as quick as possible. What is your take on all of this that happened here?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like Vinny said, that's not possible. You have family obligations. He obviously is a son. It's like I said yesterday to you guys, I think at best, and this is, I think, you know, for him, you hopefully it works out for him, and I'm sure his agent wants this, at best, it's horrible optics. I mean, when you, it might not be fair enough, it might not be right, but when you're drafted in 2020 and social media and anything you do is under a huge microscope, this is bad optics. When you're cuffed outside a house, when DEA agents are removing loaded assault rifles with guns, it's not a good look for you. And he might have absolutely nothing to do with this, but perception is reality. And when people see that, that's the first image they might have of that guy as he comes to the Raiders. So, you know, you have to, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, what do you believe? Like, and you know, the pessimist's going to say, now look, you were in a house, the DEA came in and they took out assault rifles and guns. You didn't know they were in there. Now he might not have known, but I'm just saying that's what perception does in some of these stories. So, you know, I don't know if he can get on a plane out here right away, but it probably would be smart for him to start making a move because, you know, you just, this is what happens under the optics and the microscope of 2020. It might not be any of your fault, but the perception is you were in a house with a bunch of guns.
For Lynn Bowden, I'm sure he just wants to get this sorted, get back into football, and hopefully have his mind clear of all of this in time for the season. And the NFL has just announced also that they're extending the virtual period through June 26 in place of mini camps. So there will be no in-person mini camps in June, but training camps will also see some changes. So let's get into that discussion. It's going to be a different, a bit of a format here in July. So I don't know, Adam, when you look at the new format, it's a little bit different than the past. I mean, in the past, the teams could start camp 15 days prior to the preseason opener, but now with the new format, there's 30 teams that have to report on July 28th, and the other two teams, the ones that are playing in Monday Night Football, I believe that's the Chiefs and the Texans, they play on September 10th as their season opener. They can report on July 25th. So, I'm sorry, that's a Thursday game. So, it'd be different days for everybody. What can you tell us about this, and like how will it affect teams, and especially ones with new guys coming in, like the Raiders have so many new guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll find out like what teams have been able to organize well and get their get some of their work in on the field and get going together. I think it benefits, as we thought it was going to benefit, an off season like this. Teams that have, you know, continuity. If you have the same system, you have the same coordinators, you have the same kind of team leaders and guys that have been in the system for a while. I think everything that has happened this year and the way that the training camp will be set up will favor those teams that have been able to carry over a lot of their same concepts and their same systems, and teams that are trying to put in new things and, you know, bring new quarterbacks along and a lot of new players along. Those teams are going to be at a little bit of a disadvantage, but I think the interesting part of this, and I know one of the things we want to get into, is the potential to maybe shorten the preseason and only get in two games instead of four, which would enable teams to take full advantage of those training camps instead of, you know, the way that it's set up now. You kind of work toward, you know, a game, you have a travel day, and then the day of the game, and then you're kind of losing some of those practices that are very valuable. So I think it would be fascinating if they were to make that move and allow teams just more on-field time to just get ready together instead of worrying about preseason. And especially it would be very convenient to have those games dropped if there's going to be a shortage of fans in the stadium, which if you don't have fans for preseason games, really probably more beneficial to the teams to be working on the field. And Vinny, I'm sure you have some thoughts on a potentially shortened preseason and whether that's plausible.
Yeah, I'll share a funny story. Just the other day, I was talking to a general manager of a team, and we were talking about the preseason, and he was telling me how his coach, this kind of explains on how big a priority preseason is to this particular coach. They literally have to remind him sometimes the day before they fly out, like, don't forget, we got to fly out tomorrow. Why? There's a preseason game today. Oh, okay. Like, he's so locked in on installs, offense, defense, practice, preparation, that the game itself, the preseason game itself, is an afterthought beyond an afterthought. And I think a lot of coaches kind of feel that way. Now, so I don't think that it would be a huge, huge loss if they condensed the preseason, and maybe, you know, for the reasons that you talked about, Adam, as far as being able to practice more, and especially now considering the kind of offseason that they went through, that's probably more prudent. Now, you'll also talk to coaches who just getting in and out of the huddle, getting in the locker room, the process of traveling to a game, the preparation before a game, all of that is really important. The actual game itself, you know, there's teams that don't even play their starters anymore, so the actual game itself may not have a huge benefit. But getting into the routine, the communication also between coaches, you know, you're talking about the first time that they're going to get on the headsets with their assistant coaches up in the booth, the communication, all of that, I think gets underrated as far as what preseason games, you know, mean in the whole scheme of things. But for the actual players, maybe short of like a long shot rookie or a long shot, undrafted free agent type of a guy, I don't see there's not a lot of benefit that's going to be lost in that regard. But there is still some importance to preseason games.
And also the weird thing I thought about, like, the training camps and everything that's happening as part of the new CBA, as I understand it, is there's not going to be any pads until day seven. Ed, we look forward to the pads. I mean, this is kind of, it seems like a different process that we're going to be seeing altogether. What's their thoughts on some of this?
Well, the shorter, the better in the preseason. You know, I've always stand with people who say you need two games. I'm totally with Adam in terms of on-field work comparative to playing games where the middle, you know, the second game and the last game, you don't even see anybody that matters. So I'm all for that. And I think with the pandemic, they're going to need as much on-field time as possible with to get their schemes and systems in and get rookies broken in. And I think they can actually do a better job of that than having two more games than they should. No pads. Again, I think a lot of this, and when the pandemic struck, I know they're trying to stay in shape, but it's going to be different for these guys coming back without the mini camps and all that. So that probably will work out for them. You know, this has been a long time that they've been sitting around. We know down in Vegas where Derek Carr is having his workouts, but those guys are sitting with shorts and no shirts on. There's no hitting. So I can see where this actually is going to be good for them and to avoid any injuries or as few injuries as possible before your season opens, then not get them in pads right away. I think there's a long way back for some of these guys, and with the time off with the pandemic, it probably is going to work out the best for them to have fewer preseason games and wait to get into pads. And let's be honest, veterans in this league, I mean, how much pads do they need? They've been in their whole life. They not take care of their bodies. I'm a big proponent of that. I've always been a big proponent of less pads anyway, because I think especially veterans, these guys know how to get ready for a season.
One thing if I could quickly add, the one difference when we're talking about the preseason this year, or maybe the lack of, one thing we also have to consider is that what also has been eliminated is joint practices. And those are really, really important. And I'll tell you why, covering the Rams and the Raiders had 2 days of, joint practices last year. The year before that, we went to Baltimore. The Rams practice against the Baltimore Ravens for 2 days. Well, why is that important? Well, in a preseason game, you know, even if you are playing your starters, you're the victim of the game circumstances. You may get a three and out on your first offensive series, and all of a sudden, the other team has a 11 play drive, and maybe you don't even bring your starters back. So you're the victim of the game circumstances when you're trying to prepare, as opposed to a joint practice where over the course of 2 days, you can get 80, 100 snaps where your first team is practicing against their first team. So you can get 100 snaps for your offense and to do what you want, because it's all scripted. It's all orchestrated. You get to control that environment so that you get the necessary plays that you want in for both your defense and your offense. Plus, you're here. You talk to players all the time about, like, on defense, after a while, when you're practicing against your offense, you know what the cadence is. So you're playing the game almost with an advantage. Whereas against an opposing team, now all of a sudden it's a different cadence. So you have to be cognizant of that. So it's a little bit of a change. It's an adjustment that you have to make. You don't get that just practicing against your own team. So again, yes, I understand the prudence of eliminating a preseason game or two, but it is important, especially now without those joint practice situations that have become so important and so popular among NFL teams these days.
All right. So right there, let's go ahead, take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about some things happening here around the NFL and how it may affect the season and what we could see changing in the landscape of what we are familiar with, as there's going to be a lot of that, I believe, through this coming season, like we've been talking about the pandemic and all. So stay tuned right here on the Vegas Nation podcast.
They say a healthy gut means a healthy you. Favor apple cider vinegar shots bottle this feeling into the convenience of a 2-ounce shot. Better digestion, stronger immune system, and the lowering of blood sugar levels are all just some of the benefits to shooting a daily Favor shot. Their proprietary blends are raw and organic and mixed with other functional ingredients to create a better tasting experience. First-time shooters can go to drinkafavor.com.
Welcome back to the Vegas Nation podcast. It's Heidi Fang here with Ed Graney, Adam Hill, and Vinny Bonsignor. And we were just talking about how possibility that there could be a shortened preseason here. NFL is looking at possibly going to two games, and that could avoid a lot of injuries, as we were talking about. It could be the cons of it, maybe the chances of young guys making this team, people who are on that 90-man roster, can't quite get to that 53 cut. Maybe that puts them in a weird position as far as trying to get into the final cuts as opposed to what we've seen in the past. I don't know. I wanted to touch on that a little bit before we move on, just to ask your guys' thoughts on that. Vinny, I know you were saying you didn't think it would have that much effect, if I heard it right. I was curious to know why.
As far as the preseason?
Yeah, like if the young guys aren't, you know, the chances that they have making the team, do you think it's going to be hurt, or does it affect that at all when you look at a shortened preseason and their chances of making the team?
I think everything's been affected. And yeah, for sure. As far as some of these younger guys, unfortunately for them, there was no 3-day rookie mini camp where you're competing against your peers to try to, show what you can do. There's not been any on-field OTAs where you can get on the field against veterans and show where you stack up. There's been none of that. And a lot of those guys, I mean, yes, training camp is important and cuts are made based on training camp, but some of those decisions have already been made. NFL coaches know what they're looking for. And when they can see that in an OTA and a mini camp, leading up to training camp, it makes all the difference in the world for some of these younger players. They're not going to get that. Although I wouldn't be surprised if there is some sort of a runway to training camp that might include a short mini camp for the rookies and then a conditioning period for the veterans and rookies that walk up to training camp, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, which would make sense if they're eliminating some preseason games as well. You have to get the Players Association on board for that. So if they can create that kind of a scenario where you give those rookies a chance to come in by themselves along with their peers, that might help. But if not, it's going to be really difficult for some of these younger players, especially the non-drafted players, to catch a coach's eye.
You know, as we talk about the upcoming season, a lot of what's been happening around the NFL is talks about protests, talks about how different players have taken knees, like we've seen in the past with Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick. They were pretty much at the forefront of this. We've heard Roger Goodell's apologies, and a lot of the Raiders, and the Raiders have been also putting out a lot of just different conversation pieces, as say with Tyrell Williams, with Zay Jones, with Max Crosby. They've posted it all over their social media accounts, and just the words that these guys are sharing about their past experiences, about how they see different races and people working together. And Max Crosby said to our Cassie Soto in an interview that they had this week that aired on the Vegas Nation Blitz that everything that affects his teammates affects him, and that he felt like, you know, if he didn't speak up, that he wouldn't be using his platform correctly, that he wouldn't be doing everything that he can to help. One of the things I wanted to get into about all of this, and I want to start with you, Ed, when you look at what happened with Colin Kaepernick now and the Goodell apology, I'm wondering, do you think that the NFL will kind of start to look at unblacklisting a guy like that, or at least, I don't know, giving him an apology of some sort if Kaepernick does or doesn't want to play in the NFL anymore? I don't know, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, being that you're the columnist here at the RJ.
My guess would be no, because I don't believe for a second those owners, or I'll say majority of the owners, I can't say all of them, behind closed doors agreed with Goodell making that statement. They probably felt they had to say something at that point. As I said to someone this morning, look, no matter why people say these things, if the action moves forward, then it's a good action. Right now, talk means nothing. How are you going to act? How will Drew Brees act? How will the league act? And it's just not in football. It's everywhere with all these people making statements. Talk is cheap at this point. So if it means it's a progressive nature based on the statement, then it's good. I don't for a second believe most of those owners agree with this, and that they changed overnight. So my guess is would be they won't sign him. And at this year, 3 years out, no one even knows how good he would be at this point. So no, I don't think they will sign him. I'd be shocked if they did. Maybe someone brings him to a camp. I'd still be shocked at that, because I don't for a second believe that most of them believe that. You know, I was listening to Adam on his radio show the other day. I thought Adam made the best point. You know, there's a lot of people in these times right now who you don't know what they really think. We had a NASCAR truck guy came out yesterday and total side of the Confederate flag and all that. And people might not disagree with it, but you know what? You now, it's like Adam said yesterday, you know how he feels. So I'd rather know how that guy feels. I'd rather know how Jerry Jones feels than not really knowing. And so then I can draw my own opinion because I don't know. And that I don't think a lot of these owners agreed with this. I think they felt they needed to do it. Goodell obviously is the face. Goodell worked for the owners. He's saying what the owners at that point want him to say. I don't know if they believe it. So to your point about Kaepernick, I don't think he'll be signed. And I don't think for any reason they will apologize to him, because if they were going to apologize to him, they would have done it in the statement.
Yeah. Adam, what did you say on your show the other day? I didn't hear your show. I'd love to hear what you had to say.
I don't even listen to myself. I don't know. Just make stuff up. No, listen, I think one of the things that I was talking about was it's real easy to make statements right now. I don't really buy a whole lot into a lot of people that are talking now that did not talk 3 years ago. Listen, yes, you can have a change of heart, but right now the climate is very easy. It's set up very well for you to just come out and be supportive and make a statement that's supportive. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to follow it up? What are the actions that you're going to take? Because, you know, Roger Goodell did not show a whole lot of, a whole lot of spine or a whole lot of character the first time. Now he was kind of backed into the corner. We know by these rogue employees that made this video, which was quite an act. But, what do you do when it's not easy? What do you do when it's, you know, in September and in October and leading up to the election, when you know that the president is going to make it a massive issue and try to put pressure on you to try to make this a campaign issue, and is just tweeting every day at you and standing up on the podium and berating you and coming down on you every day? Like, what do you do then? How do you act then? That's when we'll really know the true test of people's character, and Roger Goodell included, and a lot of other people included, that have found it real easy to speak up in a climate right now where it's encouraged to speak up and it's acceptable. Let's find out down the road when it's not as easy.
Vinny, did you have anything that you wanted to add, your thoughts on this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
No, please do.
couple things. Number one, I had NFL people tell me that, and I'm talking about high level people, talking about how they didn't think that the commissioner went far enough necessarily. And he went pretty far. And this is, yes, you know, Colin Kaepernick is a whole other issue. But here's why it's bigger than that. Just the mere fact that Roger Goodell essentially told the racist fans out there and the fans that refused to understand what Colin Kaepernick was actually protesting. It wasn't the flag. It wasn't the cops. It wasn't the military. And I've talked to so many players, white, black, it doesn't matter, in locker rooms, who have family members that are cops, family members that are in the military, who express the utmost respect for the police, for the military, for the flag, for America. This was never about that. Yet racist fans out there and fans that didn't want to understand took it the way they wanted to take it. And what did they do? They burned their tickets. They said that they weren't going to come back. They said that they weren't going to watch on television. Well, the NFL heard that and wrongly and mistakenly kowtowed to those fans among their fan group and decided, you know what, we're going to make an adjustment. You know, everyone kind of stand. They did not support the players in that regard. It was a financial decision by them because they felt like their bottom line was going to be hurt by supporting the players and losing those fans. Well, guess what? 2020, the NFL is basically telling those fans, look, if you want to understand, if you want to drop your racist attitudes and be a part of this and really understand what's going on, because now we're backing the players. They may not sign Colin Kaepernick, but those players are going to have the voice and the freedom and the flexibility to be able to protest the way they want to protest. If they want to take a knee, if they want to do something else, they're going to get the backing from the NFL. And they're telling those fans, look, we kowtowed to you last time. We're not doing it this time. If you want to be part of it, great. If not, there's the door. See you on the way out. We'll always have fans. We'll replace fans. Fans are being born, bred, developed every single day. We can replace you. And it's also telling the president who bullied them in 2016. And oh, yeah, I got a lot of texts from people in the NFL saying we just handed it right over to the president. They gave control to the president when they kowtowed to him in 2016, or was it 2017? That's not happening anymore. And I agree with Adam. Now they have to back it up with action. But that first step that Goodell took by basically saying, we're taking control of this. We're not listening to the outside. We're listening to our players. We understand where they're coming from now, if they didn't already, and we're going to support them. And that means everyone else that was against them is pretty much going to be howling in the wind, and they're not going to pay attention, and they shouldn't pay attention.
It's a motion for Vinny. Come on. Man, I'm standing up. I stood up, and I'm saluting. God love you. Good for Vinny.
Well, you can also take a knee, and we would respect that.
Well, I might not get up if I do, so I'll just stand up.
Well, guys, I really love all the thoughts that we had on this and how it all came together here on the show. You know, just hearing, you know, the thoughts of what players are thinking right now is something I found to be interesting. Although Adam is saying, you know, they could just be saying it because it's convenient right now, so to speak, to be able to go out there and speak. But I would encourage everybody to go back, check out VegasNation.com, listen back to that Max Crosby interview that our own Cassie Soto had with him for the Vegas Nation Blitz. He got into a lot of the issues and spoke up about them. So respect to Max Crosby, defensive end with the Raiders. And in fact, maybe right here, I'll just take a moment and play that clip where he talked about Black Lives Matter and the protests.
My whole life, I've been playing sports. I've grown up in multicultural, you know, atmospheres, and some of my best friends and, you know, guys who I call brothers are African-American and Mexican. And, you know, to me, it's just really sensitive to me and seeing how insane some of the stuff that's been going on. You know, it's sad to see that this is still going on in the year 2020. It's horrible. And yeah, you know, for me as a white guy in America, obviously, you know, I have privilege that, you know, some of my, you know, teammates and great friends, you know, don't have. And, you know, for me to just sit there and be quiet about it, you know, it's absolutely, you know, not what I'm about. You know, I'm a real individual, and, you know, I definitely care about them, just like family. So, you know, I'm going to support them all the way.
All right, everybody, that'll do it here for our podcast today, Vegas Nation. And then check out VegasNation.com, download the Vegas Nation app. Check out the show 8 p.m. Wednesdays, Cox Earview Channel 14 for the Vegas Nation Blitz, where everything is all talk on Raiders for the full half hour. And the show is brought to you by Favor, drinkafavor.com. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You'll hear from us all again next week.